Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Adam Lauer. And we are awaiting the great, the one, the only. I wish I could do the intro like Jesse Cage does, but I can't do it well. The man of the hour, Chris Fisher, my on-air mentor, as I refer to. He is a long-term radio personality. The man has been in the business for a long time. Could probably educate most of us new podcasters out there about the ins and outs of radio or talk or broadcast or even interviewing and connecting with the person. He was raised in the same small town that I was raised in, and Ocoee. Well, I was actually born in Pine Hills, but then technically raised in Ocoee. So anyway, we're from that same small town, but he's always been that personality, that loud, and you just knew when a Fisher, actually, because he's got brothers and cousins, right? You just know when a Fisher walked in the room. And Chris has always had that personality, and he has followed his dream from day one. He's bucked the system. He said, fuck all the odds, and he has done that. He has spent 10-plus years or more so in radio on some level, and now he has moved to the podcasting world with the F&K podcast. And his friend Jesse Cage, and they have a producer guy goes by Special Ed too, that works with them. But anyway, definitely check out that F&K podcast. If you remember, I was actually advertising the F&K podcast a lot of 2015. I found Chris's podcast, and I love it. It's hilarious. It really, I've talked about it a lot, but anyway, look it up if you haven't anyway. But Chris will be joining me sometime here on the broadcast. Because now we are recording live and putting it on YouTube as well. So we're trying to do all of that. We're waiting on some new cameras to come in so we can get three or four different angles within the Cognitive Cave when we have a guest inside the cave. Chris is actually going to come virtually to us from St. Pete Beach, where he runs the F&K podcast, like I said. But he's very busy, so I actually am trying to get down there to get on his show. We may talk about that too. But Chris has been a good on-air mentor, as I referred to him before. And what I mean by on-air is, look, I am no expert at this. I'm no professional at this by any means. The most training I have when it comes to anything about interviewing or on-air or anything as such is in the therapy room, right, or the office or running groups, etc. So I have been trained, if you will, to connect with people definitely on a much deeper level and attempt to build trust quickly. So I really can only pull from my therapeutic training or my clinical training, etc., when I'm doing this. So I reached out to Chris, knowing his history, his mastery of this, but also his humility to always want to get better and question everything, including himself. I specifically just straight up asked him, you know, would you mentor me in this? Help me out. Help me interview people and get better at this. And he obliged, which I thought was really awesome, being the schedule that he's on, trying to get his podcast even bigger than what it already is, plus a bunch of other things he does on the side. So he's been kind enough to do that, and we speak about once a week or so, off and on, when I'm not too busy or he's not too busy, but we try to keep it to about once a week, and we just discuss what's going on with my podcast, with his podcast, even just our lives, too. But, you know, he'll listen to a podcast once in a while and critique me and tell me where I could get better, and has really offered some great advice. And, you know, I can only hope to get better at this. You know, I never claim to be a professional by any means in some sort of broadcaster, journalist, blogger, vlogger, whatever I've been referred to as a few times. I'm just a guy with a microphone, really, and some, well, a lot of crazy life experience, a book and some other things, but it doesn't make me an expert by any means hosting some show. So Chris has been kind enough to, you know, volunteer his time. And time, like I say, is life's most valuable currency. Let's see, his personality is going to cover enough of it. I love giving the long intros because, you know, I believe people to be the most interesting species, okay? Most interesting thing out there. I mean, call it what you want. I love nature. Like I said, I'm a nature child. I love that. Nature can feed us from all angles and so much. And sometimes a lot healthier than people can. But people can also trigger us in another way. They can trigger us to be inspired and to be better, and even through love and affection, right? Friendship. And so I love people. And so when I interview people, when I talk to people, it's not really interviewing as much as it is talking. I believe, I like meeting all the different varieties of people, learning everyone's philosophies, stories, experiences, ideas. I love books and movies too, but when it comes out of the mouth of the person in front of you and you're talking to them, it's like you get to grab a piece of history right there in the now and meet this, the most unique creation, which I think are the individual people that we are. And I don't know, I think that passion has led me to this podcast. I think it led me to even counseling and wanting to help people and at the same time, understand people. And this journey is kind of what this has been about for me on the podcast, is learning people, learning their philosophies, their ways of life, their how-tos, what they've been through, what they've seen. I mean, that's a live movie talking to you, you know? There's so much competence that you can get from other people's experiences in life, what they've seen, and even how they see it, because I do believe it's about perception. And that's why I do this, right? I guess it is important, right, to know your why. And my why is that. I love exploring and being able to change and maneuver. You know, Daniel said it yesterday on his podcast, or 2 days ago on the podcast, about making movies and documentaries and why he loved it. Is that he could, it's almost like starting a new business, right? That each film was a new business. And you could start something new, and whether that business worked or it did not, it was a short-term thing. It goes, it either goes or it does not. And then you move on to the next one. That was beautifully put in my eyes, because that's kind of how I work. That's why I think I love doing this, is I can get involved with a new topic, a new area, a new idea, or a new person, and find the experts or even just those that have experienced any of those facets of life and talk to them and explore what it was like. And for me, I guess each new person is like a new book for me, and something new I get to open and read, you know, each time. So, I know Chris Fisher, I can tell you so far, is probably one of the most inspiring, transparent, motivating, real, to the point, lovable books I think I've got to read over the last year. And I appreciate it. So, Chris is going to come on now. This is my friend, Chris Fisher. You already saw it. We did that, man. I am so proud of us.
Jeez. Why not throw this computer out the window?
Oh, uncomfortable is where the change is, right? Jeez.
But the good thing is now that I've done, you know, went through this process, right? Now we can do it for our podcast here.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, is Google Hangout, although a lot of people don't use Google Plus, et cetera, it's really a good spot because they're connected to YouTube, so you can actually stream live from YouTube when you're using Google Hangout, as well as it makes it an MP3, etc., so you can upload. What up, Jesse?
Oh, this dude.
So as a matter of fact, if you wanted to do both of us, he could, because I've got it hooked up to the board now, and so you could hop on a microphone if we wanted to.
Yeah, jump on if y'all feel like it. Come on, man. What up, dude? Jump down.
Yeah. Hey. So what he was just saying, this sounds really good if you want to put on your headphones and whatnot.
I like your soundproofing, guys.
Now we need to get some of that shit.
Soundproofing. Hello.
What's up, Jesse?
What's happening, brother? How are you?
Oh, good, man. You got, both of you have just this radio voice that just appears out of fucking nowhere.
And you put that microphone in the face. Although you've got that soundproofing is fucking golden behind you, man. I love that.
I have to, whatever distracts the attention away from this.
Where are you at right now? Where is this, at your place or what?
Yeah, that's the Cognitive Cave Studio, as it's referred to.
That's cool as shit, man. That's real cool.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we set it all up in here. What's cool, what no one can see, is on the other side of the wall where the guests all sit, is everyone that sat in the guest chair has a signature actually just written on the wall with their favorite saying or quote.
And, oh, that's real cool, man.
Yeah, so it's called the cave wall. And so once you've sat in the chair, you turn around, leave your last message on the cave wall. And it's pretty, because there's been some guests that really just don't agree with each other. And then when you read their quotes, you're like, they're saying the same shit.
Well, we'll have to sit in those chairs soon. You know, this is all fine and good. And what system is this? What are we using here?
Gmail or Google Plus.
This is cool. Well, that works. I mean, did you figure it out so next time it wouldn't take this long?
Yeah. Once it's set up, man, it works really good. Like I was saying, because you can broadcast directly live from YouTube like we are now. And so it automatically records to YouTube for me at the same time, and then I can upload MP3s, etc. And I use the audio to edit it and make the podcast.
Nice, man. Well, I'm impressed.
I have my moments.
Are you guys doing you doing your interview today?
Yeah, we're doing it right now, man. Shit.
We're in the middle of it right now?
Yeah.
All right, I'll give it back. Hang on.
Well, you can always be in it too. Shit, jump in.
Well, if you want. You won't be on camera, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we ordered, like, 3 new cameras. Oh, man, your place is fucking awesome, dude. That's badass. Yeah. Look at that shit.
It's looking good.
That's, yeah, still. That is badass, man. I like that shit. I dig it. And the window view. I dig it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's a badass podcast studio, man. I like the fake brick in the background.
Yeah. What do you mean fake brick? Of course.
No, you said it on the damn show.
My wife is sick, so I'm probably not going to be able to stick around too long. So let's, now that we know how to do this, I would love to take you up on that and get on the show. So
yeah, man.
We'll do it here whenever you want.
Yeah, take care of her, brother.
Bye, buddy.
All right, I'll follow your lead whenever you're ready.
Oh, we already recording, brother.
This is on the podcast?
This is it, man. Yeah.
Oh, hey. Hey, how you doing, Cognitive Rampage listeners?
Yeah, you've been on it, man. I'll probably edit out the 45 minutes we spent trying to get on air.
Oh, cool, man. Well, thank you very much for having me on. Now, what do you want from me?
Everything, man. You know that. I mean, you know, what I've wound up doing is you said a while ago, I've already referenced you. You should have heard the intro, bro. That's like 3 minutes long.
I did hear some of it. I heard you mention my name. I heard you saying some nice things, but I was trying to figure out how to log in and get into this thing, and I blew it.
Oh, no. It was you know what? I like it. I referenced you already as being my on-air mentor is the name you've been dubbed right now.
Well, that's a lot of pressure. I hope you're sounding good, because if you sound like shit, it's on me.
Yeah, that's kind of why I did it. It's all about trading off risk, right?
Well, the thing is, you know, the difference between us, you know, I came from entertainment radio, I came from radio. And so my job every day was to look at what was in the news and have some kind of a take and be funny and so on. You have a purpose, though. It's very different. You're not just grabbing stuff that's in the news and just shooting the shit about it. You have a purpose, you know, and so that's something that excites me. And I want to help you with, you know, getting your message out there. So,
well, you have been, man. And one of the first things you told me is actually you said it off the cuff. You'd given a bunch of advice already that Wednesday afternoon
I know what you're talking about. Like, I try not to. When I speak to or anybody, if you know, that's newer into the broadcasting, you know, realm, you can't give them all. You just can't give everybody all. You have to ease them into it. And I remember going, all right, I'm not going to give you too much advice. I'm just going to say one thing. And the next thing you know, it's like 10, 15 things later. But what was that stuck out that day?
Now, you said give them a really good intro. And so I've taken that. And this year I'm giving 2 to 3 minute intros from the heart, because rather than some structured 15-second basic intro, you know, I'm not having anybody really on the show unless they're really meaningful to me. I'm trying to learn something from them, or they've had an influence in my life or are. So the intro has become really easy. And so like that 3 minute intro I do for you, it really allows me to tap into myself for, you know, the real reasons the person is in my life, or where I like them in my life, or when I'm around, etc. And so that advice was great.
Yeah, a lot of times we have a tendency to ramble into. You're talking about intro into an interview or intro to the show?
No, you said give the person. We were talking about interviewing that day, and I haven't done much interviewing, honestly, except in. Well, I've done a lot of interviewing, but it's been in a therapy office, and that's about the only skills I bring to the interview on air.
Right. Well, you know, I've had my fair share of time on the couch. So if you need to interview me and get any information out of me, you know, feel free. Go right ahead. If you want to tap into my crazy.
Well, that was the attempt. I just disguised it as mentorship.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Now that he and I speak once a week about podcasting and whatnot, I no longer have to pay for therapy. I just rattle on for about 30 minutes, and he says something nice at the end, and there we go. And I'm not giving him any money whatsoever. Adam, I do appreciate your mentorship, but you're not getting a dime out of me, brother.
Man, your wisdom's worth more than the money, though, brother.
Wisdom. So, all right. So, what do you want to talk about, man?
You know, honestly, what I try to pull out of people, which is different for you because we've talked about it before, but you share it with such a passion, why you do what you do, how you do what you do. But I kind of want the people that listen to me to hear that come from you, you know, the heart of Chris, where it started, you know, take me back from the beginning, actually, man. Tell me the story of Chris that brings me to now.
You want my boring ass professional radio story, or my you know, we're
no.
Going back to when I was 7 years old, and standing in front of the church and you know, at the podium there, and being the narrator for the Christmas church play, you know, the church play there over Christmas, and nailing my lines thanks to my mother, and memorizing my lines. And I remember that moment. I was seven years old, I think it was. Yeah, 7 years old. And I remember the feeling that I got in front of a full, you know, packed church, standing up there going, on a night very much like this, over 2,000 years ago, a little boy in Bethlehem was whatever that was born in a manger. And then so as I got into my teens, were you did you ever go through the, I know your brother didn't, you know, Adam's older brother, Davis, and I grew up together. And so I did also grow up with Adam, but he would have been the little brother. But you were a cool little brother. You were not an annoying little brother. I do remember that.
Thank you. Thank you. He would say differently, but thank you.
Did you ever go through the chubby phase? Did you ever hit, when you hit puberty? I did. And I got fat. So when all my friends were of the same age were playing Pop Warner football, I was already out of the weight class. And so I went up to help the fathers up in the booth call the names, you know, because, you know, this is Florida. We take our football seriously, even at the Pop Warner level, and have, you know, announcers and full on PA in Ocoee, Florida. So I'm up there, you know, helping out the fathers. And as I hit about 15 years old, the city of Ocoee started putting on dances for basically everybody of that age, you know, the middle school age, and said, hey, would you like to DJ those? And I'm like, well, I don't want to DJ. They're like, it doesn't matter. You know, you got to get a personality. We'll buy all the music and do everything. You just, you know, just do your thing. I'm like, all right. So at 15 years old, I started DJing. At 16 years old, started my own business where I was doing parties and weddings and Christmas parties, you know, that kind of stuff. And as I got into college, I just interned at a radio station. When people were telling me, oh, you have a nice voice, you should get into radio, I, in my head, as a dumb little, you know, red, white trash from Ocoee, Florida, being on the radio was the same as being in a movie to me, you know? To be on the radio, go, hey, dude, you have a nice voice, you should go, you know, try to get on the radio. It was like, hey, you know, you should go try out for Top Gun or something. You know, you should try out for a movie. And so it just didn't. You know, it just didn't seem like it was a real thing to me. But then come to find out, you don't need a lot of talent, a lot of schooling or anything else to become a radio guy. So I became one of those back in 1992, an intern, one of those whooping boys on a morning show out of Orlando, WXXL, with Doc and Johnny in the Morning. And yeah, so they send me out in the street every single week, abuse the shit out of me. And that's where it all began. And then I went off and then started a career, bounced around Florida. And in Tampa 2 years ago, lost my job for the third or fourth time in my career and decided not to go back to radio at that point. That was a little over 2 years ago. And so here we are. I'm running through my 401k. I'm down under – I'm down into the, you know, E. I'm on E in my 401k, and I need to figure something out here soon. That's my story in a nutshell.
Well, that's the fast forward story. But you know what I noticed is I want to know how influential were the parents in allowing you to just develop that dream? Because it seems like you right place, right time. But then, you know, what I like to say is that experience brings competence, and through experiences, we can, a passion can all of a sudden just emerge.
And there was a passion there, because up until that point, I think I was a little bit more on the introverted side. I guess as I started to discover myself, you know, if you figure out who you are in your high school.
No kidding. So you actually, you were more introverted before you turned to this.
To me, somewhere along the line, because I was also picked on too, like elementary school, you know, you had a couple of bullies that followed me into the bathroom, beat me up, that kind of stuff, right? But it was somewhere right around that 11, 12, 13 age that I learned a trick. And the trick was how to make people laugh, how to keep them engaged, how if I just kept talking and moving, they couldn't get far enough to make fun of me or, you know, anything like that. And I guess I was decent at it. I was good at it. And as I, you know, more and more as I got through my teens, the more and more of a class clown I became. Like, you know, my senior year, with superlatives, what they call it, I was, you know, class clown. But that's something I think I learned along the way as a defense mechanism to try to keep myself from getting beat up.
Amazing how it's the experience, you know, that competence, or, you know, seeking an experience out of fear and seeking protection. You found humor and found a way to develop that. And so you got a reward from an experience. You got safety and protection from an experience of creating laughter. And
it's creating chaos. It didn't always have to be laughter. It could be just chaos. It could be nonsense. As long as it's, you know, kept them, kept the people around me moving from one focal point to the other focal, another focal point, that they wouldn't have enough time to make fun of me or beat me up. So,
well, you know how some coaches or whatnot, even parents, they refer to athletes, you know, coming up, young athletes. Sometimes they'll go, well, you know, he or she has it. You know, they refer to it. And the older I've gotten, I'm beginning to believe that's true. I mean, you just happen to know the D1 athlete, right? He's 12 years old. She's 11, and she's out running everybody and out jumping everybody. You know, it seems to be that maybe from the beginning, man, you just had it for radio.
Maybe, you know, I don't know. But originally you asked about my parents and the kind of support I got through my teens.
I wasn't sure if you avoided that on purpose, so I didn't go back there.
No. I just wanted to make sure that I gave my parents credit, because not everybody will allow their kids to become a DJ at 15 years old, you know, and not help them the way that my parents did. So they did. They backed me financially so I could rent equipment if I needed to. Of course, then I would get paid from a gig and pay them back, and then eventually bought my own equipment and all that kind of stuff. You know, before I turned 16, you know, they were dropping me off at my gigs, you know, and then when I'd forget, I always would forget something. Mom, you tell dad to bring, I forgot my Crater record of this, or some wire or something like that. And so they were very, very supportive, you know. And then when I got into radio, because that was, you know, basically a wedding DJ, party DJ. But when I got into radio, it was different. They supported me at first, but then as I went out on my own, I got a little bit more blue, a little bit more controversial. I moved from top 40 radio, where it's waka waka wacky stuff and just being a fucking moron, to rock and roll radio, where you can have a little bit more edge, you know, alternative rock. And so I constantly pushed that envelope throughout my career. And so my mom stopped listening a long, long time ago. She couldn't take it anymore. But
do they have any regret for where they pushed you toward or what they supported?
Oh, I'm sure. My mom blames herself for all my problems. Mom, come on, you can't do that. It's not your fault at all. It's a matter of, yeah, you know how that goes.
Yeah, I that's why I pointed that out earlier when we were talking, man, is it seemed to be that your parents were very supportive, you know, and kind of cultivated that in you, you know. So it's like the support, the environmental support, the push toward it, plus your drive, all of that experience is, you know, compiled. And you're going to be humble enough and not say it, but not many people survive in a broadcasting world as long as you have.
No, I made it a little over 20 years before I had to take a break, but it did a number on me. It definitely did a number on me reflecting back on my career now.
What was the toughest, man?
What was that?
What was the toughest part about it, man?
I did mornings, you know, for the better part of my career, 90% of my career. And to do mornings from, you know, 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. or whatever the time was that we had, you have to get up at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning or 3:30 in the morning, or if you had something to edit at 2:30 in the morning. And years of that really compounded. And I am not a disciplined person at all. I am not a disciplined person. And in order for you to make it through, I think, the rigors of a morning show for a career, you have to be disciplined on how you eat, how you sleep, and how you stay active. And since it took so much out of me so many times, I would just come home after the show and just go right to bed, just lay down until I had to get back up in the afternoon to go do a happy hour or some other appearance. And then I got into that Elvis Presley kind of pattern where in the morning it was something to wake me up. No, it wasn't amphetamines or cocaine or anything like that. It was whatever was legal at the time. You know, ephedra back in the day, remember, was illegal. It was yellow jackets and stuff like that. Energy drinks, Diet Coke. Not really a coffee guy. So that's what's getting you through the morning. And then at night, you know, I went through a phase of Ambien. I went through a phase of Xanax. I went through a phase of just over-the-counter, you know, sleeping pills and whatnot. So, and then there was drinking. So then the afternoons and the night gigs that are out doing, there's a lot of drinking. And, man, I would drink my ass off and be in that party mode. But then year after year after year, and you have warnings, too, growing up. Like, hey, don't drink that much. You know, I had mentors along the way. I was like, hey, man, you want to slow down a little bit? I'm like, yeah, whatever, whatever. And eventually I was like, holy shit, man, I can't go to sleep. I can't wake up. I don't know what's up. I don't know what's down. And so when I lost that gig August 26th of 2013, I went, I got to take some time off. I need to go on a little walkabout. I think I'm going to just sit and float in the middle of the universe and kind of see what comes to me over the next couple of years.
Well, I think you could probably shed some light because you were birthed under radio, I think, at an interesting time. It was the era, I think, of the DJ, right? The birth of that radio icon. It really was. I mean, you were coming up around that era.
Well, it was the end of an era as we got into the 90s. We were coming out of a time where radio was very rock and roll in the 80s. You know, you talk to the generation before me. I entered radio in 92. You talk to a guy who entered radio in 82, and they have completely different stories. A lot more drugs, a lot more hookers, a lot more money. As we got into the 90s, those things were changing a little bit. But you think about it, you kind of equate the hair metal of the 80s and the decadence of the 80s. The same thing was happening, you know, in radio. As we got into the 90s, things started to shift a little bit. And then the late 90s, with the telecommunications bill passed in 1998, and that deregulated the industry. Once that happened.
Explain that. Walk people through that, because, you know, part of the mission of Cognitive Rampage is trying to get competence and things. So I'm trying to, you know, learn more about it. What passed? What changed then?
Before January of 1996, not 98, 96, you basically could only own about two or three radio stations in each market. So you didn't have Clear Channel, CBS, Cox Media, these huge companies in these markets, because they only get two radio stations, maybe three out of the deal in the bigger markets. Well, they deregulated the industry in 1996 and everybody went batshit crazy. That's when Paxson came in, started buying up everything. And then Clear Channel bought Paxson, and all the major corporations out there got, you know, that wanted in, got in. After that radio chain, what was the original question? Just explain the telecommunications bill. And so, yeah, so basically that's what the telecommunications bill, they deregulated it and it changed everything. So the radio industry became just like everybody else out there, where corporations came in, not radio people anymore. Because before then it was, if you bought a couple of radio stations, it's usually because you loved radio as well. Even if you were a corporation, it's because you wanted to get into radio, not just because it was a business move. But now it's just X's and O's, just like anything else. It's their radio employees and revenue and debt. It's just all numbers on a piece of paper now. And, shit changed after that.
Yeah, when I mentioned you came up in an era, see, I too would...
Okay, so there we go. We were talking about the era. So an end of an era ended basically in 1996. The radio era that you're talking about Well, it got stabbed in 1996 and then slowly bled out over the next few years. And then another blow to radio happened in the early 2000s with Boobgate, or whatever that was called, with Janet Jackson, because that's when the FCC started to crack down on everything. And radio felt the effects of that. And now radio is just, it's a very, very different now than it was in the golden age, as you call it.
Okay. Different.
Different.
All right. It's different now. I don't. All right.
Much different.
I'm left to my own imagination to the definition of different now.
It's. I just, it was once a pseudo art form, I guess. Once a pseudo art form that they relied on the personalities that were behind the microphone to go get those audiences and get the ratings. And now you've got somebody doing research telling you that you need to talk about this. You got to do it under this amount of time and just keep saying, coming up next, coming up next, coming up next, because you have to exploit the flawed rating systems that, that radio has to adhere to. You have to exploit. That's what you have to do. It's not about so much connecting with your audience as understanding the rating system and playing to the flaws in the rating system. And that's why radio sounds so much different now than it did 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Rather than content shaping the audience, they're shaping content to create an audience.
They're just doing to radio what they do to everything, and that is homogenize it, play to the averages. I used to get yelled at because when I would be on the air, I'm sitting there talking, it was like, if I would reference the listeners, I would go, you the average listener, blah, 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 blah. I'd say, you the average listener, you the average listener, you the average listener. Well, one day, Michael Sharkey, the program director, calls me. He's like, dude, you got to quit calling. It just sounds like you're talking down to people. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Because in our meetings, behind closed doors, when we're talking about listeners, all you ever will hear from a program director and a consultant and a GM is the average listener, the average listener, the average listener. So it just kind of just echoed in my head. So anytime it's like, all right, you, the average listener, blah, 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 blah. But they hated that because that was me basically kind of pulling behind the curtain without pulling behind the curtain. And it really annoyed the shit out of the way, you know, that it sounded. But I loved it. I loved, you know, I don't know why. I just absolutely loved it. And but it was frustrating because to me, there's no such thing as an average listener. The math that they try to play, it doesn't fucking matter anymore. It doesn't fucking matter. I'm sorry. You hear me just all of a sudden just get deflated. Like, I don't even want to go down this path and, you know.
I'll back up then because it may lead you back there anyway, man. But when I said you came up in an era, yeah, you got into radio at the end of an era. But I think what was most important was not the 92 forward. I think it was before that because I got to say that, you know, the greats, the eras, the 80s, there were some early 90s and late 80s movies that referenced a bunch of radio stations that were opening. Pirate Radio, I think, was one.
Pirate Radio, that was much later. Let's see, some of those early, what was that one with Christian, what's his face? Was that, wasn't called Pirate Radio. That was Pump Up the Volume.
Yeah.
Pump Up the
Volume. Yeah. Yeah.
That was one of those. A Good Morning Vietnam, of course, was huge in that time. But the names that were coming out of the 80s, the era that you're talking about, Howard Stern.
The point I was referencing, though, man, is where I think it was most influential is because you were, when I say you were raised in it, meaning you grew up with that around you when you were really influential younger. And so when you took the mic in the church that day, I think a correlation to all those things that maybe you grew up being around the 80s radio, those big.
Oh, no. I was not a radio dork. A lot of guys that are, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but a lot of radio guys that are on the radio grew up with what you're talking about, you know, listening, glued to their radio. And so they grew up with this, I want to be there one day. To me, radio was kind of on the fringe. For me, music is on the fringe. You know, yeah, I like music, but I was not, even in my teens, wasn't one like, oh, I got this record. And you sit down with the record and you listen to it over and over and over and over again and memorize all the lyrics and all that kind of stuff. Music could annoy me. You know, I can't concentrate with music. You know, people have to study. Some people study with music on. Not me. No way in hell. That's just, it's impossible for me. So I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't a radio thing. Maybe it was a performer thing in me, maybe, but not necessarily a radio thing in me when I was 7 years old up there at the church podium.
See, I like that correlation, man, because all it does is back up my book for me, is I say in the book that, look, you may not even know it. People may not even know what a passion is for them, right? What that it even exists in them, right? So if they stay within who they think they are, within their comfort zone, or if they just follow what's been influential, thinking some talent will just emerge or passion will emerge, that's not so. That you can not necessarily be what you called a radio dork or follow it your whole life or be into it. And then all of a sudden, in one moment of an experience, one uncomfortable experience or exciting experience, a passion explodes in you through an experience. And from there, dude, what, 20 years now out of something? Most people would assume, like my question did, that your background was that of a radio follower.
Right. But no, not at all. I even in high school, once I started that mobile DJ business, and right out of high school, and I was working as a lifeguard at Wet n Wild at International Drive in Orlando, I still didn't think I was going to be in radio. I, at the time, was eyeballing engineering, mechanical engineering. You know, I liked, it's something that I enjoyed, and I thought that I'd be going to school to become an engineer. But then, that first or second semester or something like that, I ended up getting an internship at a radio station, after that, it was over. At the first time they put me on the microphone, they just berated the shit out of me. It was at the end of a show, and I was supposed to read like the thank yous, for the show. And I didn't. And so I grabbed the microphone. I was like, all right, Dr. Johnny, now I would like to thank you. And it's called puking in radio. When you hear people talking about like this, we call it puking. And they just cut my head off making fun of me. It was a horrible experience for a few seconds, because I thought they were ripping. But basically, they were just hazing me and, bringing me into the fold there. But yeah, the first time I went on the air.
It's good to know what the lingo is actually called, because I reference it a lot as that voice that they go into, when they announce it like that.
Well, no, you don't hear DJs like that on the radio much anymore. Those guys now are relegated to
the news anchors. It's the news anchors.
Strip clubs. I think strip clubs. And then it's funny, too, when you're into the strip clubs and the DJ, comes up, starts talking to you, and then starts talking about, wanting to get in the radio and this and this and this. And, of course, I'm always polite and give them the answer that they need to hear, the right answer. But in my head, I'm like, listen, motherfucker, let me give you a little piece of advice. Drop this. Make sure before you walk into a radio station, you don't talk like this.
But you do it good, man. Now all the news anchors do it.
Well, see, the news is different because they're reading off a teleprompter. They all have that similar cadence because it's not off the cuff. They're reading, and even though a lot of them did type up what it is that's on that teleprompter, it's still, it's a very different experience when you're reading off of a teleprompter. And so that's why it sounds like, I don't know if it's as pukey. It doesn't need to be pukey, but it's definitely a little bit more of a rigid cadence.
Yeah, well, maybe it's the I observe people and they're talking, and you'll see a news anchor go from this sad face talking about something tragic and then exactly switch from that to this big smile of this next green story of what's really happening. And I'm like, what does that do to someone's psyche over like 10, 20 years?
They're not listening. They're not listening to what they say. That's why every now and again you see those YouTube clips where somebody, kind of like the joke that they played in Anchorman, where he's just reading off the prompter and then, he says, San Diego, go fuck yourself, And that's very much how it works with people in the studio as well. They're not listening to what it is they're saying, because you're right. You can't. If you're an empathetic person at all, you can't go through this one story to the next and keep changing those emotions, because you're right. There is going to be a neurological shift in your head, after 10, 20 years of doing that. So that's why sometimes they can also sound callous. They can sound like they're not being empathetic, because they're not, and they can't be. But that's kind of the nature of that beast.
Yeah, that's difficult, man. And I can see what you mean as radio being shaped that way over the years, and wanting to shape and trim you almost to be something that you're really not.
But that's life. It's their radio station, not mine. I looked at it as a way to connect with other people. I looked at it the wrong way. I didn't look at it like a business, and it's hard for me to do that because I'm connecting with people. Because if I'm looking at it as a business, then in my soul, in my gut, I'm sick, because then I feel like I'm just manipulating people's emotions for ratings gain. And I can't approach something like that. I know there are a lot of psychopaths in my industry that industry. Based on research, by the way, not just because of my own conversations with people. But you know, last couple years ago, there was a research that came out, you know, the industries that had the most sociopaths in it or something, psychopaths. And the media industry, television, radio, was top five. Lawyers, top five. Politicians, top five. And so a lot of the people around me, they don't, I mean, I wish I was a little bit more like them sometimes. They don't give a fuck. They do not give a fuck, except for what it is, how, whatever it is they can do to get ratings and get revenue. And for me, I was like, no. I'm going to go make the connection with the people. You can go ahead and worry about the revenue and do whatever. But for me, I can't do that. I'm going to be me, because when I'm me and you're not fucking with me, things seem to work. And I'll bring the ratings in for you. But the more you fuck with me, the more that changes. So,
yeah, I want to go back to that first internship, man, that even in what some people would consider, you know, a roast or almost a hazing, right? A really uncomfortable experience. You know, you stayed with it. I was going to ask you a while back, what were some of the early experiences, man, that made you fall in love? You said you started right in before I could ask it, you know, the first time you grabbed the mic. But then you went into it being a bad, or like a hazing. But, you know, what were some of the early events that kept pushing you?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I didn't go home that day after they yelled at me, because they laughed too. They're yelling, they're busting my balls. They're not, you know, at the same time teaching me a lesson about how to deliver content. And, but I love it. I mean, like these guys, and this is back in the early 90s, in mid 90s, when street stunts were huge. You'd send they call them street guys. Your street guy was out there. This was before reality television was big and Jackass was big. So the theater of the mind that we created on the radio was that originally. And every week, like I said, every week they'd have me out in the streets doing something. And I would play this, oh, woe with me. Oh, come on, guys, don't make me do that kind of thing. But in my head, I'm like, yeah, let's do this, you know, let's have some fun. And it was great. I really, really enjoyed it. But I was just talking to one of the guys a couple weeks ago, Johnny Magic, who's still there at XXL in Orlando. And we were talking about, you know, I don't know that you could do this stuff today. Because it really was. There was some hazing going on. I guess it still happens, but I think it is going to come to an end at some point. Because with all the stuff, the news about bullying and hazing in colleges and in the professional world, you can find that stuff, especially in places like radio and professional sports. And it's that juvenile locker room mentality that will bleed into the workplace. But that's because a lot of times you're trying to take this juvenile energy onto the air. You're not most radio stations, unless you're, you know, that conservative talk on the AM dial, you're serious all the time. Most people are trying to keep things light, you know, and fun and so on. And so that the hazing of an intern, it was a part of that. It was a part of that. But I think the more we are talking about bullying in this country, the more you're going to see it around you and not even realize how much we bully each other.
Well, there's a line between that too, because I look at it, you know, they may have been hazing you, but it was for a right reason. You know, one of my favorite coaches of my past was Coach Mike Mitchell, and he was very tough at first, you know, with me. He was really shaped me hardcore. I really almost hated him at first, and then on the back end, he became somebody that really changed my life, not only my game. And you know, that moment through those internships, those hazing, you say it's a part of life. Sometimes that, I think you can take that one of two ways. You either take that as being rejection, bullying, or you can take that to a point of someone's trying to shape you and help you become something better.
There's a lot of different ways to do it, man. And what happened, I think what it is, this has been going on for generations, centuries. And it's this mentality, because it's when these guys are treated like shit, whether you're pledging to a fraternity.
No, I got to back myself up. It does go too far, right? I mean, where people are getting injured and killed, and I mean, you know, it definitely goes too far. So I'm just saving my own ass a little bit.
What it is, it's this mentality of, I went through it, so you have to go through it. I went through it. Oh, suck it up. I went through it, so you can go through it. Fuck you. Fuck you, you fucking fraternity fucks. Fuck all you fucking bully fucks. And now look at me, I'm bullying. And there's much better ways to get this kind of stuff done, to get to teach somebody. You don't need, and listen, by the way, I love the guys that I was hazed under. You know, I love the guys that I interned under, and they didn't abuse the shit. They never hurt me.
It was good coaching. Like I said, like Coach Mike Mitchell, it was good coaching, right? And because it really pushes you to that edge.
You have to pay your dues. I was like, go fuck yourself. I'm more talented than you. I don't need to pay shit. I'm going to surpass you, you fucking cunt. And I am being a little bit pointed on this one because as I did enter my career in 1992 as an intern, and there was this asshole that worked at that same radio station who was telling me that I would not get on the air, that that I'd have to go to, you know, Washington State in the middle of nowhere to start my career and work my way back in this, because you have to go pay your dues. And that really fucking pissed me off. Really, really, really got under my skin that I had to, that you're telling me I had to pay dues. Because to me, it's not about just wait your turn, wait your turn. That's what people who don't have any talent need. You need to wait your fucking turn. You need to wait in line until somebody gives you an opportunity. People that have talent, people that have drive, don't need to pay their fucking dues. Now, you still pay your dues in a certain way. You just don't have to wait in line and have somebody else whoop your ass for a few years until you get to where you need to go. I did my thing. I paid my dues. But once I became a host of a show, I never did that shit to somebody else. Now, I had interns that I abused the shit out of for fun, for entertainment purposes, but it was never under the guise of paying your dues. It was for entertainment purposes only, not, hey, you need to pay your dues, so go wash my car, and you're going to go pick up breakfast this morning. Oh, and you're going to pay for it, too, even though you're the intern and we're the ones that make tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right. You know, you're not the first one, Chris, has said that. There was a one of the youngest CFO or CEOs of a marketing company named Jeremy Pound was on the show, and he has not been to college, no college degree, has a book out, a very successful podcast since he left our podcast too. But he sat on it, and he walked in at 17 to a newspaper company that owned like seven or eight newspapers. I can't remember, but he basically said, "Hey, you know, you need websites," and they said, "Okay, we don't know how you do it." And so he just took that over, no college degree. Everybody told him he was nuts. And they told him the same line you said, you have to pay your dues. And he said, fuck that. No, I don't. I don't need a college degree. And before you know it, the dude is, you know, as successful as he is. And I love that notion, man. I really do, that you don't have to pay your dues, that I think people think they have to.
You do in a way. Like the universe is going to make you pay your dues.
Well, you've got to put your work in. We get that.
I don't have to sit there, and just because a couple of assholes that are a little older than me had to go through some shit, I don't have to take their shit because they took shit from someone else. They can go fuck themselves. You're supposed to crawl, then walk, then run. I'm not good at that process. I may get up and run kind of a guy.
Yeah.
But what that also means is you're going to trip and fall a lot. You're going to hit, stumble, and go flat on your face a lot. And that did happen. So I did pay my dues. I did learn my lessons along the way. I kind of learned my way, though. And it's not anything that I regret. I mean, it's just my personality. I can't help it. Those times in my life that I tried to slow down, let me learn to crawl, walk. I'll do good for a few. And it just happens. You know, next thing you know, I'm trying to get up and run again. And I'll either make it, or fall flat on my face and get up and try it again.
Well, what keeps you getting up, man?
I think it's like a drug. You know, we were talking earlier about how this almost became a defense mechanism for me, that I've turned into a class clown, that I turned into a career. But the fact is, when I go on the air, there's usually anxiety. There's a lot of anxiety that goes along with it. So I think it's almost like a drug, like that. When I'm on the air, it's like I'm leaning over the edge of a cliff and somebody's got me by the back of my belt. And if they let go of the back of the belt, I'm falling over that cliff, but I don't have any control over it. And so while I'm on, especially doing a talk show, I don't have any music to rely on. That's kind of the feeling I get until it's over. And then it feels like, you know, like a base jumper, or you jumped out of an airplane or something like that. Once you land and you're safe and everything's good, that feeling that comes along with it. And I just think years and years of that, it's become almost a drug. Yeah, because there's an anxiety I get when I go in to do a show.
You still – all right. So that's a question I guess we'll we'll do some live mentorship on air too, man. You know, before, like, even this one, I got to tell you, man, I was quite nervous doing this interview. One, because I know I'm sitting in front of a fucking pro of 20-something years.
And stop.
No, I am. I'm slapping you on the butt. And it's true. And so for me, sitting down to, you know, just talk to you on air, I still get that anxiety. I still get that rush, even, you know, where it's like, all right, don't fuck up, you idiot. You know, you're like, all right, this is, and sometimes you get in the zone. Maybe it's as close to the football field as I could get again, but you still get it today. So this is more than likely, all right, that is the drug I'm chasing, maybe, huh?
Well, it probably is different for everybody. Also, I don't think I can do anything else. You know, even though I needed to remove myself from radio for a while, it's been a couple of years. We got this podcast, the FNK podcast. It's going well. Not making enough money to live off of, but it's coming along nicely. I don't think I can do anything else. I've contemplated. I even tried. I went and worked for Pods for 2 days. You know, I'm in training, and after 2 days, I just, the headaches, my eyes were killing me. You're sitting there in training and you feel like you're in fucking junior high school, the way that they have to talk to people. And I just couldn't do it. So I have to, this is it. You ever see the movie The Wrestler?
Yes. Yes.
You ever see the movie The Wrestler?
Yeah.
He knows nothing else. There's nothing else he knows, nothing else he can do. So he's going to do that until it kills him. And I think I'm doing the same, except hopefully it'll be down the road before it kills me.
I don't think it's going to kill you, man. I think you're killing it. That's the inspiration that, you know, I really feed off of. You know, I told you when I think we first reconnected, however long ago, was that inspiration is you do live that definition of what I say is a cognitive rampage, man. You have followed a passion that was sparked. You have pushed through it. You know, you paid your dues even though we say you don't necessarily have to. We covered that. But you paid your dues. You've pushed through. And still you stand today doing what you love to do. And for me, in my eyes, that is successful. That is have made it, because remember, when we do lay there, when that time comes, brother, it's not look at what our outcome was, man. It's look what the fucking journey was, man. And you're riding this motherfucker, man.
We'll see. I've definitely been riding this motherfucker.
Like, hey, that's clinical, by the way. That's clinical.
Now that I'm out there, you know, feels like I'm floating in the middle of the ocean. And no matter where I look, I don't see land. I know it's out there somewhere. I know if I just stay patient, let the winds do what they do, and the tide does what it does, that I'll hit that shore that I need to be on. But it is still a very anxious place out here right now. And it has a lot to do with the pressure of money, only because of money. I'm going to get married, or hopefully get married here in a year. You know, I've been living off my 401k, man, for a couple years, and it's down to nothing. So I got to figure something else. I got to figure something out without having to get a real job.
I think you're on the right path, man. You know, we talk a lot, and we always talk about how the universe will unfold as it should. And I think if our essence of what we are is in the right place, and our hearts are successful and are happy, and, you know, like my grandma used to say, man, if money is your only problem, then you ain't got no problems.
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant, except when you're in a relationship. And one half of that relationship, you know, money is a huge issue.
So. Yeah, well, it always sounds good coming from an 83-year-old right hand to God. You know what I mean?
Right. If money is your only problem, then you have no problems. What, does she not live in America? Because that is the God of America.
Yeah, man, but she's managed to do it, man. She's done wonderful, man. We got on my grandma, Chris.
Well, I'm sure she's a good woman.
She's good, man. You know, the time you actually started referencing, I want to go back to it, actually, because it really was an interesting time. You called it reality on the radio. And I remember that. I mean, there was an essence, you know, I was in the nightclub business for years. And during that era of my nightclub, there wasn't a time where one of you Radiohead people weren't in this thing acting like rock stars. Some from random, you know, it would be from 96.5 to XL 106.7, the guys at 104.1. I mean, they were known, and you guys would party like, I mean, you made frat boys and college people look like just beginners.
Well, you never seen me party, so you don't have to necessarily lump me into that, but I guess you could lump me into that if you did see me party.
Yeah.
Well, that slowed down for me quite a bit now that I'm 43 years old.
But that era, man, it really was. You talked about street personalities. You know, try to educate some of the people more about that era, because only a few of us, you know, it was a shorter era, if you will. But I remember that. There were buses and, you know, special eds on the streets and monkey boys floating around everywhere. You know, ship.
Did you know that, by the way? Do you know that? Do you know Stan?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't remember. Stand or not.
But that was the era, man. That was what was happening.
I think only now that I'm able to kind of analyze the era, because when you're in it, you're in it. You're inside the box, so you can't describe the box. But
well, you said, I love the line, man. It was, we were reality on radio. I wrote it down. We were reality on radio before reality TV.
Right. We were also your weather and your time check. All these stuff that you have on your app right now, all the stuff you have on your phone, you would come to radio and you heard a radio guy go, hey, it's 7:10. You look down at the clock in your car, and if it wasn't 7:10, you reset the clock in your car because you're assumed if you said it's 7:10, it's 7:10. What a horrible assumption we made. The same thing with the weather. The guy gets on and goes, today is partly cloudy, a high of 75, and da-da-da-da-da-da. You listen to the guy. That was gospel. And a lot of people didn't realize, too, that a lot of the reality that you heard on radio at the time, too, is only like half reality, because we could do what we want. It's theater of the mind. We could sit there and describe something that wasn't happening at all. But at the same time, we did bring a lot of and this was, you know, getting into the late 80s, going into the 90s, this real radio that came out of the morning zoos and your breakfast clubs and stuff like the wacky, you know, that kind of stuff coming out of the 80s. And so that was the era that I entered into, was that you bring your personal shit on the radio too. You're not just, hi, I'm just the guy in the microphone, and you listen to me every day as I smile and bring you today's hits. Oh, and coming up next, ooh. Oh, you also you had your ups and downs. You know, if you weren't having a good day, you could say, man, I'm not having a good day, and here's why. But you had to make sure that you did a good job of relating it to the listener, you know. So you don't want to just sit there and talk about yourself all day long. You want to bring them in. Go, it's something like, are you like me? Do you have a dog that's only 8 pounds, but somehow takes up the entire bed? So you've addressed. I didn't just go, hey, everybody, how you doing? Man, my dog's taking up the bed again. You know, just me talking like a journal kind of entry. You're trying to include you're having a conversation with the listener's mind. The stuff that's coming out of the speaker when you're listening to the radio is interacting with your brain. You're having a conversation with that person on the radio. You just may not realize it. Sometimes you do realize it, right? You end up laughing out loud, and you're looking like a moron in a car because you're sitting there by yourself laughing out loud. Or you're yelling back at the radio, or you respond out loud to something on the radio. But what it really is it's an illusion. It's a trick. The person on the microphone is having a conversation, and those inflections and those ups and downs and the questions, the rhetoricals. Hey, are you like me? Have you ever, you know, that kind of stuff. It piques the ear, you know, it makes the ear go, what? Huh? Somebody's talking to me. And in a sense, I am, but I'm not. But it's still a relationship that's being developed between the person that's listening to the radio and then the announcer, that's saying what he or she is saying.
Now that is what's called a cognitive rampage about the radio industry, my friend.
Is it?
Hell yeah, man. That was beautiful, man. I also want to ask you, being that personalities on the radio, et cetera, broadcasters are so strong, a.k.a. sociopaths in a majority,
I don't know if they have it in them to go out and, you know, on a killing spree or anything like that. But what we have in us in the media was going back to what we're talking about with news anchors is, the ability to distance yourself from human beings, to cut off that empathy and sympathy because, you know, because what's more important is the joke. What's more important is the punchline. What's more important is that, oh, holy shit, I can't believe they just did that on the radio. And if they're, because I'm a very empathetic person, man. I feel your pain. I feel when you're talking to me and you're telling me your story, I'm feeling it. So be careful when you're talking, because I'm going through what you went through. But as I got into Tampa, which would have been 1999. Well, no. I take it back. No. Daytona Beach. As we entered Daytona Beach in 1996 and 97, 98. I was in a very different place. And this goes back to Doc and Johnny and that first morning show that I was on as an intern and being hazed and whatnot. Is back then, what happened to me, I found my place. The hardest thing for me to do is to make Doc and Johnny laugh. In order to make those two guys laugh, I had to say fucked up shit. Like a good conversation for us, that would be like me and Monkey Boy, my cousin Stan, and some of the other interns that those guys had, you know, back in the day. In order to make those guys laugh, I had to say really fucked up shit. I'm not talking, this is not on air stuff either. This is off air stuff. So once I kind of learned that trick, I kept going to that well. And next thing you know, I was very crass, very brash, very quick with an insult. And as my career progressed and I was being rewarded more and more and more, rating success, monetary success, moving up in radio markets, it just got, or for some, you could say better and better and better. I got more biting and more edgy. But for me, I was moving farther and farther away from who I was. I'm not the kind of person that likes to make people feel bad. I've cost people their jobs before because of rants that I went on, going after people on the radio. And then somewhere along the lines, I realized what I was doing. I realized, or I should say, what I had become. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I couldn't reconcile what I was doing on the air, trying to be, quote unquote, controversial. And it wasn't even trying. It wasn't like, it just became a part of me after a certain point. And again, this goes back to the empathy and how you can cut that off because it's about ratings. It's about ratings. And so, yeah, so I'm glad I've taken these last couple of years off to kind of recenter myself and remember the human being that I was.
Yeah, that's what I was going to lead to, man, is, you know, being, you know, Jesse's got an extensive background himself, is what's it like merging two personalities like that?
It is very exciting. It's very challenging. He's referencing my partner here on the FNK podcast, and Jesse Cage did radio for, you know, 20 years himself, was at 98 Rock WXTB here in Tampa for years, was also at 97X with me for a couple of years as well. So we were coworkers and friends. Then we became competitors and enemies. And now we are back together trying, because we both feel like in this digital age with the technology that's available to us and our experience and skill set, hopefully we can put some shit together and be able to make a living for ourselves, or at least supplement a living for ourselves with, you know, this new era of digital media. But as far as bringing us together, I want to say it's difficult. It is a difficult process, but I think that we've done a great job. Like, there's a part of me in those first, I don't know, the first 3, 4, 5, 6 months, I'm like, man, I think at some point we're just going to fucking have at it. I think we're just such two, you know, those alpha male. We both were running our own shows for 20 years, and then to come together and try to not take the lead all the time and learn how to follow. It's been a process. For me personally, it's been a great growing process personally and professionally. And I like the path that we've taken. I like where we are right now. There's still a lot of shit up in the air. We still don't know where this is going, but I feel good about where we are.
Yeah, I do too, man. Since you two have created something so powerful by merging two things so powerful, there's no doubt how that, you know, is going to end up. But, you know, what would you tell either, yeah, just stick to a young one. What would you tell a young one entering some sort of podcast era, this new era you're entering into, but all skills kind of match the same? What would you tell them?
Don't get hyper-focused. I've had this conversation multiple times with people. Don't get hyper-focused on getting into radio. You don't necessarily need to be on the radio anymore. If you feel like, man, I have a passion, I want to talk about this, I want to do that, you don't necessarily have to be on the radio anymore. From YouTube to podcasting to live web stream, I mean, you have so much available to you. Think about it. Even here in Tampa, let's say I get back on the radio, the most I'll ever have access to is 2 million people. if I get back on the radio here. But that's split through all the radio stations there. So I'll be, if I'm lucky, get back on the radio and you're talking to 100,000 people a week, you know, according to the ratings. 100,000 people a week. You can do 1 million people a download, you know what I mean, on a podcast. Yeah. And that's around the world. So it changes everything. For those that were growing up thinking, I want to get on the radio one day, I know you still want to, and I know why. Because you're the ringleader, or you feel like it anyway. You are a ringmaster. When you're the person on the radio, you feel like you're the one sitting in the middle of the crowd, the middle of the city, and all attention, all ears are pointed in your direction. And there's something that is definitely empowering about that. To be on live is definitely a very different feeling. To be live on the radio is a completely different feeling than recording a show. But it depends on your passions. If you're somebody that has some shit to say between podcasting, blogs, video blogs, like I said, like right now, we're recording this for your podcast. We're doing it through Google Plus Hangout. And right now, all the people that you invited to be a part of this are watching this video. They're watching you and I. That's incredible. That's amazing to me. And so if you really want to get on the radio, now, if you want to get on the radio, play music, that's completely easy. You love music and that's what you want to do for a living. Is you just want to play music for a living. well, good luck with that. Good luck with that.
Yeah, that I came through that little brief era, man, when I was DJing back when you actually had two records and had to mix them together. And then this era of the CDJ came out and it was matching numbers and I just quit. I walked away and I'm like, everyone's a fucking DJ now, man.
Everyone's a DJ.
Yeah. And walked away, man. That passion that you feel, you know, has got to build up to one hell of a philosophy. I mean, I believe our philosophies in life are always changing, you know, granted, at least until we die. But, you know, what is your life philosophy to date? Wow. And how does that play into your, I don't know, your broadcasting philosophy?
My philosophy. I don't know. Can I go pee and think about this and come back?
Yeah, man.
My philosophy. I really got to pee really bad.
Later, man. I'll be right here. I'll be right here. Go ahead. Oh, man. Sometimes, you know, my questions, they get off. They're rather long-winded, and I have been informed of that on a few different ends, and so I'm working on that as well. Is, you know, sometimes when the guest like Chris is talking, my mind is flown with so many thoughts and ideas and places I want to go, right? You know, that therapist guy starts meeting with, man, I want to know more. The mentor-e guy starts mixing. And, you know, I'll ask these long-winded questions. And, you know, Chris is rather transparent. So he had really delivered his life philosophy, if you will, by telling his story and saying what he's been through and what he believes. And, you know, the life philosophy isn't something that you really can answer very quickly unless you've really thought about it and processed it. A lot of people just tend to use quotes they know for philosophies. But in my book, The Cognitive Rampage, A Dose of Authentic Revelation, there's a tool that I reference as a tool of change called your life philosophy. And basically, it walks you through how to begin to build a life philosophy, one that's drawn out and focused, because we need a life philosophy that umbrellas a lot of choices, situations, and moments in life. And a lot of times, one little quote won't do that. But we actually, I actually use those quotes, you know, from your history to work in a life philosophy. So when Chris doesn't answer an idea of a life philosophy, for me, what I hear is somebody that really is thinking about it. Because if you tend to answer off the cuff but haven't played into it, then I don't think you're being honest with it. So the authenticity or being able to answer the life philosophy question off cuff, if not thought about, would be unauthentic. And so, like I told you on the intro, Chris is about as transparent, as authentic as it gets. So, you know, like I said, my questions become confusing at times, but like I said, I think he shared his philosophy throughout the interview, you know, and talking about his experiences and ideas. And my man has joined us back. And so I was basically summing up that idea.
I was at the urinal there with my penis in my hand. Thinking more about the philosophy. And, you know, a mantra, you know, a couple of mantras popped in my head. You know what I one is breathe, trust, which reminds me to, you know, take a deep breath. And then on the exhale, trust, breathe, trust. And what that is for me, it reminds me to trust in whatever it is I think I believe in. You know, so those times that I'm getting angry or anxious or worried, no, breathe and trust in whatever it is I think I believe in. And then I start to calm myself down. Another mantra that I have for myself or remind myself of is let your crazy breathe. Let your crazy breathe, meaning, you know, whatever they've ADD, bipolar, whatever things. I'm a creative type, okay? I'm a creative type. And I can't let the system, I can't let civilization stamp out my crazy. And so I have to make to remind myself to be me and just let your crazy breathe.
That's it, man. Dude, Chris, thank you for coming on, man, and sharing the story, the advice, the love, the philosophy to everybody, man.
Adam, love you, brother.
I love you too much, man. That's how I said, man. Thank you for the mentorship, the advice along the way, too, that we share privately, man. That's meant a lot to me. And I think fast-forwarded a lot of what I think I do pretty well on the show.
Well, I we'll talk more about it afterwards because I don't want to embarrass you in front of everybody.
All right.
I'm just kidding.
No, you're not. No, and you know what's awesome is I got excited, like, hell yeah, I'm going to learn something. And
all right, we'll do it right now. Just remember, man, passion. Don't worry about the logistics, the semantics, the little rules of delivering content right now. Stay passionate about what you're doing, and it will connect with people. All right? Just remember that. If you're starting a podcast, you're starting a radio show, be passionate about what you're talking about, and that will connect. That will resonate like that conversation I was talking about. You're having a conversation with somebody's brain, not them. You're having a conversation with their amygdala, the emotional centers of their brain. And if you're passionate, the inflections, the everything will be there to engage that person and that audience.
Man, you're full of cognitive rampages, man. I love it, man. I love it. What's that? I missed the end. What'd you say?
So let's keep going, except I'm down to 3% now on my computer.
Yeah, we're going to lose you at the end, man. Thanks again, dude. Tell everybody at the FNK podcast I said hello and thank you, man. And again, thanks for your time. It's the best currency we got, man.
Right on. See you soon.
All right, brother. Talking to Chris is always a good time for me. I enjoy our mentorship conversations as well on the phone, and I look forward to being down there on the FNK podcast here as soon as this book releases, man. But you know, Chris, I know he'll be back on. His views I love. I can't wait to have him on now that we've covered who he is, what he's about, his philosophies and drive, and really be able to have him back on as kind of a cast member of the Cognitive Rampage, you know, coming back on to talk about topics and ideas, because you never know where we're going to head to. So he has some really powerful opinions, not just about radio and people and how you treat people, life, et cetera, but he's got some very powerful opinions on mental health, politics, tradition, et cetera. So, again, thanks, Chris, for doing the show, man. I love you lots. Jesse and the rest of the camp at the FNK podcast, I can't wait to be down there and Jesse and have you on the show too. But I hope you enjoyed talking to Chris as much as I do. Thanks for listening to the Cognitive Rampage, and I hope you're taking care of you.
Cherish frozen winters, stare at snowy blizzards and take it to heart, and then break it apart. I carry hopes and blisters, cutting heartstrings with a pair of broken scissors. I'm still trapped in a middle school slow dance, stepping on toes in the mistletoe romance, missing throat, discomposed, who holds hands with grief, kissing hope with no chance for me.
I'm just searching for some beautiful, a dream that I can catch, and a person who's unusual. When I find her, I try to face the tide, fight the hurricane and tidal wave goodbye. All the spectrums of angels choking to death on the septums and halos, breadcrumbs and fables. Why change? I hang at the ends of a payphone with no change or number to reach. What blank is the sky I slumber beneath? Under the speech, this song's about hope, joy, love, and defeat. All it takes is a peaceful autumn day for you to be happy and me to call it fate. And even after a fucked up childhood, I'm still trying to believe in God and grace. I try to get a piece of peace and sit and listen infinitely, holding on to benefits and isn't it so innocent. We try to find another time and underline the cynical, the pitiful, be running, hiding, undermine the animals. When intervals are miserable, the fall of bigger fools, the force of physical, then in the soul, to find a bit of form and form another time and place where you can go and be so suitable. When all I want to do is go and search for something beautiful to me. The me. I died once and I knew it was suitable. I died twice and I sang it like a musical. I died again when I thought that the news would hold everything I love on the search for some beautiful. I died once and I knew it was suitable. I died twice and I sang it like a musical. I died again when I thought that the news would hold everything I love on the search for some beautiful. After searching for some beautiful.
Yeah, check out that song, man. That's Sadistic's remix over Emancipator's Balancing Act. That's his album, but look up Emancipator. I love that song. But, yeah, you know, I always sneak one in at the end of one of these, man. Hope he's taking care of you.